Hello, you're very welcome along to another edition of the Greg Hughes podcast. Today's guest is a woman whose name has become synonymous with resilience, advocacy and community care in the Northwest. For over 30 years, Mary Doherty has been the driving force behind Lifeline Inishowen, an organisation that grew from a vital local need into a lifeline for hundreds of families. Serving the most northerly peninsula in Ireland, where major services can be over 50 miles away, Mary has ensured that no one in her community has to face domestic abuse or crisis alone. Whether it's answering the helpline, walking alongside people in court, or securing the funding that keeps the doors open, her commitment has been unwavering. Just this month, that's April 2026, that Lifeline dedication was recognised on a national stage. Mary was named a winner of the 2026 AXA Community Hero Award for Women's Safety and Wellbeing. It is a prestigious honour that comes with a €20,000 prize, which she made sure went to her charity. But more importantly, that prize shines a light on three decades of quiet heroics right here in the northwest of Ireland. Now, I am delighted, as I mentioned, to welcome onto the podcast Mary Doherty, former founder of the Inishowen Women's Outreach Services in 1994, which then went on to become Inishowen's Lifeline Inishowen today. Thank you so much for calling to us, Mary. We've spoken extensively over the years, right? But it's nice just to get a nice long-form conversation where we can learn a little bit more about you and your work. How are you keeping?
I am keeping well, thank you. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for all the support we've had from Highland Radio over the years. It's been amazing. Thank you. I have to acknowledge that.
And congratulations to you as well. You won the AXA Community Hero Award under Women's Safety and Wellbeing, and we're going to talk about that. I'm not sure. How are you with praise or recognition?
Because
I know you dedicated it everywhere else and all that kind of stuff. You don't like it?
No. Look, it wasn't a one-person show. It was couldn't have been done without all the volunteers, the committees, of course, the community, and I better mention my family, who, God bless them, had to put up with me all those years. And anyone else, I hope I haven't left anyone out. But when I was in Dublin, I did accept it on behalf of everybody, not just of myself.
And one of the key group of people that you accepted on behalf, which I thought was very special, was the women who've contacted the service and engaged with it.
Of course, that without them, we've learned so much from those women. They are the most amazing. I personally feel they should be getting the award, not me, because they are the people who taught us so much. They are so brave. I just can't say enough about them. And when I was, I suppose, volunteering with us, you know, to be quite honest with you, it was a joy because I met amazing, amazing people.
It's an oxymoron that, isn't it? In that, you know, you're meeting people too at their lowest point, but as opposed to you're meeting them at a point where they're about to turn, hopefully, their life around.
Oh, they do. Do you know the best thing about all of that is, do you see when a majority of the women come in, their confidence, their being, their whole self is gone. And when they come in, they're nearly on the ground. That's the only way I can describe it. But do you see about, over the months, I'm not saying it happens within days or weeks, over the months, oh my God, you can see them coming back, growing stronger, believing in themselves again. And I mean, that, no one could pay you for that.
And because a lot of the abuse they would suffer, it would be of a coercive nature. In other words, they've probably spent years, decades being chipped down to make themselves or to be told that they're nothing.
Yes.
And to see them start to lay those blocks to become the fantastic person they can be again, who they deserve to be, I can only imagine that it's a tough road, but it's a pleasurable road to walk with them on.
Without a doubt. I mean, that's what we always did. We walked their journey. Everybody's journey was different. And it was just in their time. And I think when we started off, Greg, oh my God, it was a different story. Things have improved. I know
Let's
people
go back
don't
to 1994 and we'll tease Sorry. That. No, it's fine because I really want to understand how what it was then Inishowen's Women's Outreach Service came to be. What was the conversation? What was the gap that you felt needed filling or what?
Oh, like in 1994, and you can imagine back then, I didn't realise until recently how far back it was. Mm. But in 1994, it was very, people didn't talk about domestic abuse. It wasn't discussed. It wasn't. And it was just about a few of us got together over a cup of tea and we discovered that each of us knew someone who had asked us, did we know where they could get help? And from that, when I talk about research, we made up a wee questionnaire, went around and asked different people, mm. you know, what we were learning. We were learning. I have to say, at that time, because it wasn't discussed, because people didn't talk about it, it was a private thing, we were told, mind your own business, you're responsible for breaking up families. We got a lot of that at that time. But we also got a lot of people who supported us, otherwise we wouldn't be here. But it was much more difficult to highlight the subject. It really was. And what else can I say?
Just an interesting thing you said there. You said that it wasn't talked about.
No.
Do you think, to some extent, in the years leading up to 1994, if not 94 itself, that it was almost accepted?
Oh, it was. Oh,
if you know what I mean. It's not that it wasn't talked about. It was just that...
Oh, no, that was the norm. And, of course, the majority of the women would come in. One of the things that always amazed me was when they would come in, they would say, there's somebody worse off than me. I know that. Mm. But I just want a wee bit of support. Or I want to know, is this for real? Is this how it should be? Especially if it was psychological abuse, which a majority of times it was. A lot of them would have said that when they came in, that the physical abuse was easier than the psychological abuse.
Amazing. Did it take you a while to get your head around that?
Because of course
that
it did.
That wouldn't be the default opinion. You wouldn't think that that would be the case.
No, I mean, years ago we would have thought, yeah, you would have, people nearly laughed. Mm. Can I just say my own experience when I was a teenager and I was reared in a pub and we had music at the weekends, right? But there was this couple who used to come in and he was the life and soul of the party and his wife would be sitting there nearly her head, touching her knees. Personally, at that age, now, I apologise to the woman afterwards, but at the time I thought, well, that poor man, imagine being married to her. She is as boring as... It was awful. And can I tell you then, it was later, that was when I was a teenager, after we'd set up Lifeline, I think we were in it about 4 or 5 years, this poor woman came in and told me her story. That was a great learning. That's all I can say.
And never judge a book by the cover.
Oh, exactly.
So what she, even in those years ahead, she was enduring it.
Her story was horrific. It was... I think even with all the years, it was one of the most horrific stories I'd heard. But thank you God, we were able to get her out, get her into, get her set up in a home, and she really appreciated it. And she even, you know, kept sending us thank you notes. But that's what it was about.
I think too, perhaps maybe, you know, the way, did you tell her that you remembered her from the pub?
Later I did, because then she was better.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, you know, it might have been an interesting insight for her to see what someone who she didn't know at that time could see.
Yeah.
And it would change your perspective. It's a fascinating insight that it really is. How often, if at all, are the abusers, the domestic abusers, held to account?
Not often enough. It's everybody covers up. It's, how do I explain? Even when you think of it, the women who are living it are covering up.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not bringing them, and they don't want to, involve their families. They don't want to go to the guards. They don't want to, all of those things, but they're protecting everybody else. Mm. They've done that all their lives.
They're selfless, though.
They are amazing.
But it plays directly into the hands of the abuser.
Without a doubt. It's a bit like, as I would often say, when you give an alcoholic money, you're allowing them, you're enabling them. Mm. And it's the same thing in a different light. Does that make sense?
To this day, though, when we talk about domestic abuse, and we know domestic abuse affects men and women, but primarily affects women.
Yeah.
That's the facts. Men still seemingly get quite defensive, as if we talk about domestic abusers, that we're talking about mankind or men, males generally. Wonder what that is. I can never truly figure that out, where people take personally us talking about, or maybe are they themselves, is it holding a mirror up to themselves and they see something in themselves? I don't know. I never understand why men get so defensive when we talk about domestic abuse.
Well, I think we are aware, Greg. Now, we have to be realistic here. I would say most of us know some man who has been abused, maybe not physically, but psychologically. Mm-hmm. I know that over the years we have supported parents of their sons who've been abused. I mean, this, it's a fact of life and it's real. What is it? What I keep saying, why are we competing against each other?
That's what I don't understand.
I don't understand. I never will. Men are from Mars. It's a fact of life. And women are from Venus. We're two completely different species, if that's what you'd like to call us. And we think differently, we do. But why can't we just acknowledge the greatness of each of us? Mm. You know, work together. But male or female, a narcissist is a narcissist.
See, I feel too, societies, we're almost, it's like it's like a big circle. Because, you know, there was a time where I think we accepted the abusive women went on. Then we had movements and we had conversations, we had exposure whereby, you know, women were able to speak out. And I can't help but feel, maybe it's with the rise of conservatism, that we're going in a situation again where women are effectively being saying, keep your mouth shut, men are men. But a man can be a man without having to suppress a woman.
Exactly. I mean, a human being, even woman, can be woman without suppressing a man.
Yeah, for
sure. We have to be realistic here. But I do think you're right. I know that I was a feminist, a strong feminist. I wasn't aware I was when I was younger, because I learned so many stories from older people and women, older women, and how they were disrespected, how they, you know, especially women years ago, oh my, you know, I could nearly get upset. Anyway, older women who when they got married, they moved into the home place.
The marital home.
Yeah, marital home. They were treated like dirt. Yeah. Nobody respected them. A few of them now, and this is years ago, had even said that they were sexually abused by other members of the family. They had no respect for them. And I think that's when it started to hit with me, whatever. My poor father couldn't understand me, because I was such a feminist and he was the old type.
Yeah.
Oh, typical you, Marie. But I said, you know, when we were younger, right? I'm going back into, when we were younger, there's 14 of us, 6 boys and 8 girls, right? The boys were served their dinner first. That's what it was like. You know,
all the boys.
We do laugh about it
there
now.
There is still some of that going on, though.
Oh, well, I mean, now they would wind us up and they'd come and say.
Oh, no, you're not in your family. I mean, I mean, it does still, it's interesting. So all the boys would be served.
All the
and there'd
boys,
be no malice in that. It would just be
that's the way it was. That's the way it was. And my father would sit for, not, my mother enjoyed it. I mean, she was not by any, she was quite a strong person in her own right. But that would have been the norm. You know, my children, if they had been down with my staying, if my mother went away for the day and they were down, and they says, "Mummy, Granda would sit at the table and say, is it on a ready?" You know, they were, you know, it's a different generation.
It is.
Whereas we would have automatically just, you know.
Yeah, and there are some, and that is fine, but then it can go to the other.
It can.
It could go to the other. And the reason I'm saying that, there's some people might be listening and they don't see that as any way abusive at all. And maybe that's the way they were happy. And in a way, they were in control of the house.
Yeah.
But then there's others that it would have gone far beyond.
Far beyond. No, I mean, as I said to you, listening to those older people and their stories about moving onto the marital home, as you said, was really scary.
Almost heading to prison.
Oh, I mean, and they, but you would never have known. They were amazing, amazing woman.
When you say you got criticism for, I suppose, upsetting the apple cart, people like the status quo, I suppose, was it sort of from individuals? Or was there ever any, you know, I don't know, guards or the clergy that reached out to you?
Or
it just have been
people. Nobody would actually care. You know, it'd be kind of, who do you think you are?
Yeah, I got you.
You know, he's not a bad man. Mm. You know, that would have been really, the as you can understand, years ago, just was accepted, as you said.
Yeah.
It was the norm.
And one thing that we've often talked about over the years is the fact that, yes, there are other services available. And even back in 1994, there were some services available in Letterkenny. But especially if you were sort of maybe not allowed to drive or there weren't mobile phones per se, so you had to be careful what number popped up on the phone and what have you. It would have been, it's the same as a million miles away in Letterkenny.
It might as well have been Dublin.
Yeah.
Because just to get away from that person, you know, you would have to justify where you were, what you were doing there. And the biggest fear, I mean, we all know, when the woman starts to make, that's when she's at the biggest risk of being killed. If that perpetrator believes they're losing control, they up the antics to try and keep them under control more. Yeah. Does that make sense?
No, 100%.
Yeah. So at the time, and there were no public transport to Letterkenny. Like, there just wasn't.
Yeah, it didn't exist.
It didn't. And to go to Letterkenny, even, I was talking about that to somebody recently about us going, it was nearly like a whole big day out.
I know.
People can go to Dublin now and do it.
Yeah.
You know, in that time, it definitely was a big deal. So there's no way that somebody could go to Letterkenny to get help.
So when you first got started, you got funding from Inishowen Partnership, which was allowed you to train up volunteers.
Yeah.
At the first instance, you were open two mornings a week. And I presume then it takes a while to get the word out. But how busy were you from the get-go?
Right. I was just trying to, I wrote it down here somewhere, sorry. The difference in the statistics in 19... See, now I can't find it. I think it was in that first 2 years after we set up, the statistics were something like 100 and something people, or phone calls, right? As opposed to in 2024, it was 600 or something. So, but then the amount of people, say that those helpline calls, people wouldn't have come in as much. You know, at the beginning, it was phone. So you could have the same person five or six times rather than calling into the place, because that was a big breakthrough to call in.
But you also had to empower people to feel the confidence to reach out.
Yeah.
And that takes a while.
Oh, without a doubt.
Because we've talked about sort of the cultural norms potentially, right? But also to the fact that people start realising, well, actually, what I'm going through, I don't have to.
Yeah.
Now, it's tough now for people to see that go back to 94, 95, 96, different country altogether.
It was completely different, and people were more isolated. And it was very hard even to get the awareness out there. It's easier now.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, the difference is unbelievable. But then even to, I mean, where do you do it? We didn't have computers in our house. We didn't have laptops. We didn't have Facebook. We didn't have any of that. So even just getting that out there. Mm-hmm. So we had to convince, say, the like Action and the Show and give us the room originally to get started. And then IEDP, and the Show and Development Partnership, they all came on board, which made a difference. They were able to do it. And then I'm trying to think of the journey now.
Well, you got FAS funding
as well. We got FAS as well. FAS workers,
That's when you went from 94 to 99, it was the two-day week.
Yep.
1999 is when we're starting to get more into what we know now, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, at the same time, in those 5 years, that was a learning curve, right? Because you didn't have all the answers.
Without a doubt. And we had to, like, to learn, we had to get involved with all these other groups, you know, like the Donegal Women's Centre, Donegal Domestic Violence Service, Donegal Women's Group, the National Women's
Board as
Northwestern
well,
Health Board. We had to convince them. That was the hardest. They kept saying that, there's a service in Donegal. Yeah. We don't need it. That was our big fight for that many years, was that pointing out that Inishowen was the size of County Louth and is a population bigger than Leitrim. But they weren't listening.
They thought
Letterkenny
serviced everywhere, effectively.
Everywhere in Donegal.
People hark back to the good old days of the Northwestern Health Board. It wasn't always rosy. Matrons on the wards and stuff. You know, we have this. And I'm not saying, I'm not having to go at anyone, but it wasn't perfect.
It, it, nothing was perfect. Oh. But sometimes I think then it's gone to the other extreme. Mm. Because then you're talking about the matrons I worked in the hospital.
Right.
But the one thing was, there was somebody there. And right. by golly, everybody did their work. And it didn't matter what role you played. They had that bit of control. Is that right? And
no,
I don't like the word control.
No, I get where you're
But they kept
from.
The place.
Authority.
Authority.
Yeah.
Sorry, that wasn't yeah. control, wasn't well, the right
we'll,
word.
We'll get there together. it sounds like a lot of paperwork, hey, in the first 5 years.
Oh, it was an, well, paperwork and
meetings.
And, meetings yeah. were the big, and we had no money. But I mean, it was there for a reason, just to prove that we needed it. And,
yeah.
you know.
And can you remember from memory, sort of, you sort of say 94 to 99, and I'm not looking for specific
no.
numbers, but you see, if say someone availed of your service, the one thing about domestic violence is often it's shrouded in secrecy. So it's not like having a good experience as a restaurant where you tell five other people. So it's about, so it's in other words, a slow process to get the message
oh.
out and reach people. But did you see a steady increase in engagement over those
oh,
5
definitely.
Years before you're able to go 5 days a week?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's just because the more women were contacting us, we needed the 5 days. And well, for that reason, we had more calls. And I'm just sorry I don't have
no,
each year.
No, we don't need them. It's just
but each year
sense.
It got more.
Yeah.
Right? And then it wasn't until we actually got established the 5 days that it started to tick off.
Mm.
You know, that first, is it 4 years, was the hardest? You know, trying to prove the need, trying
yeah.
to, yeah.
yeah. You knew the need, but you had to prove
to,
the need.
We had to prove
you
the
had
need.
To demonstrate it, especially
yeah.
when you're facing challenges in that, you know, you're arguing this is something Inna Shoen needs.
Yeah.
And I suppose then the turn of the century into 2001, funding for a coordinator, some help with running costs.
Yeah.
Now we're really into, you know, the getting close to what we know now, I
yeah.
presume.
Well, we're still struggling.
Yeah.
I have to say, without the community, because the community were behind us, they did a lot of the fundraising. We did some fundraising. We got small amounts of funding to keep us going.
Maybe
I think it was nearly to keep us
here
quiet.
And there or whatever. Yeah.
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 So, and of course, too, we don't have to put a price on volunteers because they're giving up their time completely freely as well.
But that's what I'm saying. Without the volunteers, that service would not be there now. Mm. And I can, you all know, all between the committee who were volunteers and the volunteers who worked on the helpline, the volunteers who worked in the shop, the fast workers, without them, none of this would have been possible. The service wouldn't be there.
Now, in relation to the services that were provided, right, you will obviously initially just give an opportunity for someone to speak, and often maybe it's the first time they've spoken about it. But how much of that journey, maybe even potentially to a court appearance, how much of that journey can you walk with your clients, if I could put them?
It depends.
I know they're not clients, but you know what I mean.
No, but it depends on how much they need.
On their
needs. Everyone's different. Mm. We walk their journey with them, whatever they need at whatever time they need. And then you'll have people that'll come back. You know, maybe they're away for a year, 2 years, and they might come back again to get counselling. You know, it's not straightforward. We can't say, you know, in a lot of services, which I find very frustrating, you're allowed 6 weeks and you have to move. That's not humanly possible for anybody who's lived in that
yeah.
situation. It really isn't. They need that support.
And then there'll be a relapse, you know,
of
whereby,
course.
And I use it like it's a drug, but whereby someone can get controlled or convinced to go back into the home again for the sake of the kids or for the sake of your mum and dad or whatever it
oh,
might be.
Oh, I mean, one of the things, well, it wasn't the only time, but I think for me over the years was this lovely young woman, and she had 3 children and she left. You know, she came in and eventually she didn't just, it wasn't she just left. I'm not saying that. She came in and we supported her, and eventually she left. Her mother and his mother convinced her to go back.
Wow.
Now, thank God she continued to come to the service. And eventually after, I think it was 6 months, you know, with being out for so long and come back, and she realised how bad it was.
Yeah.
And then she was able to move on. And she moved and they had, I'm not going to say a home, they had a house, an amazing big house. And they moved, and she had three children, to a two-bedroom house, yeah. right? And she said to me one day, she says, Marie, one of the children says to me, Mummy, isn't this a happy home? Wow. She says, I knew I made the right choice. And I thought, wow.
It wasn't a house, it was a home.
That was a home.
Because you have to support the children as well too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that the mothers, you know, they want their children to have the support that they need. And they'll know when. It's not when we think. It's when the mother realises that child needs support, and then she'll refer the child on to counselling.
I mean, do people change their behaviour, I wonder, early on in relationships or marriages? Like, and you know, like you could have someone who's been in an abusive relationship for 40 years, or someone who's been in a relationship for a year or 2 years. There's no pattern, is there? It can
there's
be
no
any
pattern.
Stage at all.
From what I've learned over the years from listening to the woman, they are being manipulated from the beginning, and it's very early on in the marriage. They're lovely before, and when they've got them, it's nearly like catching them in a web. And
yeah,
and when they've got them, that's when the abuse escalates.
So maybe start making them distancing from their families.
Oh, that's one of
maybe
the biggest.
Maybe their friends.
Yeah.
Maybe let's have a joint account, don't have your own account.
Yeah. Or just you don't have any account.
Yeah.
And you have no say whatsoever. That's, I think the biggest thing is isolation.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing then is even isolating your children from your family or other people, but also trying to put a gap between them and their children.
Mm.
You know, when the woman, if she leaves the home, right? And sometimes some of the children will stay and some will go with the mother. Now, that is a wild, hard decision. And as you said, over the years or over the months, they might go back because of that.
Mm.
But you find that one of the things I would always say to them is, no matter what, just text your child and say, I'm thinking of you. No more than that. They might send you back a nasty message. But if you send that every so often, and what I have found is that, yes, the children do eventually come back.
So you almost go into a holding pattern until the time comes.
You know, as I keep saying, a mother's a mother. You can't expect a child to understand everything that and the reasons. You can't. I mean, that's not. But just to let them know you're thinking of them.
Yeah.
Eventually, they do come back. And
it's astonishing how, and I only know this from the years of chatting to people like you, that the abuser, man or woman, but the abuser ranks it up, doesn't it? So, you know, isolates you, criticizes your appearance, your look, your weight, turns your children against you. Then how many times have you heard, if you leave me, I'll kill myself and it'll be on you and you'll,
they
get desperate and they will say, anything
yeah.
if they see that control slipping.
Yeah. And also one of the big things, I suppose, for mothers is, oh, you're a useless mother and I'll report you to social services. That is a very
again.
Big, and you'll never see. They'll know that they are very good at manipulating. The perpetrator is very good at manipulating other people.
Mm.
I mean, that's without a doubt. And I know different people have said to me that they've tried marriage counselling. Now, through ignorance years ago, I would have thought, right, you know, everybody can change. But a lot of them came out of it and came back and said the perpetrator was able to manipulate the counsellor in the marriage counselling sessions.
Yeah.
That they believed, you know.
So in other words, they come out feeling that a stranger now agrees with
exactly. Exactly. They are very good at what they do.
100%. That's what, listen, it's salespeople. It's like everyone has a talent.
Yeah.
It's how you use that, right?
Yeah.
So when, again, everybody's different and every situation is different. But Mary, do you often find that some of the initial conversations is people are trying to find out, am I going mad?
Yeah.
Is this abuse?
Yeah. A lot of times now they'll ring in and just, right? But until they come in and talk to you one-to-one, it makes it easier for them. That their first call will be, look, I don't know if I'm, you know,
am I in an abusive relationship? Am I overreacting?
They'll not even use that word.
Right.
maybe I know there's people worse off than me. I've heard that so many times. Yeah. But I just don't think this is right. So when they come in and when they come in and talk face to face, they realise, sometimes they realise before, but sometimes it needs that.
Yeah.
For them to realise, right, this is wrong. Nobody should be treated like this. But until they make the decision, I always find it very hard when, say, a sister came in and she knew what was happening and whatever. And I don't know, I think they expect, they wanted us to go in and take their sister out of the situation. And it was very hard to say to them, I'm sorry, but unless that person is ready themselves, it's never going to change.
At the recording, as we record this podcast, and it might be different when people are actually listening to it, and this actually demonstrates that when we talk about domestic abuse or abuse in a relationship, it can be boys on girls, girls on boys on boys, girls on girls. But regardless of the sex of the perpetrator stroke victim, the situation is very recognisable. As I say, at the moment as we're recording this, there's a big ongoing storyline, and they're taking the time with it in Coronation Street. Now, Soaps aren't as popular as they used to be, but still people pick up on it. Do you find sort of spikes in awareness leads to spikes in communications? Can you sort of track that in your service?
That's a good question. Well, you find that, yes, the more awareness that's out there, the more the people will approach you. I mean, that's a fact. That's why it's important to get out there, to create awareness, to talk about it. One of the things, Greg, I just wanted to say before, is that to me, the best thing we can all do together now is teach our children what a healthy relationship is.
Well, you had the school program, Healthy and Unhealthy Relationships, and that's where you need to go into, because the one thing we have to be really careful with is we're competing with other people. So, you know, we saw that documentary recently about the manosphere, but you don't have to go too far on social media to see guys, whether they believe it or not, sort of perpetrating this image of what a man is and that women are subservient, women are useless, women should do whatever they want to do. If we don't go into schools like you guys are doing, or if we don't counteract that as parents, that's all the kids are hearing.
Yep.
And it could be girls that feel that they could do it, or they have a certain submissive role, or the young lads might feel impaired. And these guys are brilliant messengers.
Oh, without a doubt.
So if we don't do something,
yes,
we're behind.
Yeah, we are. And I think just that it is, I think even parents, you know, what I'm saying about that healthy and unhealthy relationship, we got a great piece of information from Women's Aid. One side is what a healthy relationship, the other side is what a non-healthy.
I'd say everyone might be shocked looking at that.
I'm just saying, that's what I was going to say to you. It shouldn't just go to the students.
Yeah.
We need to be handing that out to everybody.
Yeah. Do you get many third-party contacts? Do you know what I mean? People who are concerned about someone in their life,
they suspect
they may be.
Yeah, that's what I was saying to you earlier about, you know, maybe a sister came.
Oh, right, okay, or mum or dad.
But also I told you that over the last, I suppose, 3 or 4 years, we've had a few parents whose sons were abused and they didn't know where to go. So they came, it's the same advice you give them and tell them what's wrong. But then we give them numbers to refer their son on to another service, right? Because we can't.
You're not geared for it.
We're not geared for it. Yeah.
Are things getting worse? Because, I mean, obviously, say, for instance, in Northern Ireland, but on the island of Ireland, we've lost some amazing young women in this county. Beautiful young mums with the world at their feet died in the most horrific circumstances. We've seen it across the entire island. In Northern Ireland, obviously, there was a massive push recently as we record, given the huge amount of women whose lives are being lost. What is happening, Mary? Are things getting worse or is there more awareness? Often the answer is a bit of both, right? But it just, with all the services and the brilliant people like you working, the fact that it feels like every other day we're hearing of a woman dying in a domestic setting.
Now, you're asking me that. I think that personally, because the world is changing so much, and I think that because... I'm trying to watch what I'm saying here.
Don't watch it. Speak freely. Like,
no, but I just think that the message that people, some young people are, that want to pick up is that we can do what we want, when we want, whenever we want. Yeah. And I think that's why it has escalated. That's why they're not afraid. That's why I think perpetrators, you know, because of who they are, they'll pick up that side of it, not the other side. Not that it's wrong, that we should change, or they'll not. Personally, I think that's what it is. I think they're getting the wrong message.
And they feel empowered to do it.
Oh, it's their right to do whatever they want.
Speaking from the Republic's perspective, obviously we coercive control legislation introduced.
Yeah.
I believe strangulation became a specific crime. Now, often when these cases go to court, they're negotiated into not including some of that stuff. But like on the face of it, then we've had ministers that seem to have taken a particular interest in it. Are we doing enough? Is there more that we could be doing? There's campaigns to have a register of domestic abusers or like, again, from someone who's been at the coal face for as long as you have, you know, how far have we come, but how far do we have to go?
Right. Can I just tell you, to be quite honest, people can't see it, but I can see the changes have been happening over the years, and it is very slow. And that is the reality of it. Yes, I do think there should be a register because it's funny. In the last couple of weeks, I've been talking to a few different people who have come out of a relationship, and what they've said is that shortly after the perpetrator moved on, they met up with somebody else.
Yeah.
And they said, they tried to warn them, but they are so good at what they do that, and that's hard for them to watch because they know what that person's going to go through. That's the kind of woman that we're working with. So sorry, have I gone off what you said?
No, not at all. It's just, I understand. And you've kind of answered the point, and I don't think there's necessarily a particular answer, but there's another thing too about the language we use and the influence we have on young people. There is this sounds like I could be blaming women, but I'm certainly not, because it's not really women. But you get this thing whereby celebrities or people in influence say, I go for the bad guys. You know what I mean? I know what you're saying.
But that's
as if that is a practical, logical choice.
No. Can I just tell you, Greg, it's because the perpetrator is a good manipulator.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. The best woman, I mean, and how they can cover it up, I mean, it's just amazing. You know, the woman that I've met that I know have covered it up for years.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God. But they are the, I would have looked on these women before, a strong woman, they had well paid jobs, you know, a lot of them. A lot of them weren't allowed to have jobs. They weren't allowed to learn to drive. They weren't allowed anything like that. But the people who did, right? A perpetrator is a good manipulator.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's nobody, the women aren't weak. They're not weak. They're amazing.
Yeah, I guess
and how they survive in that for even a month is beyond me. Mm. So, yes, they are amazing human beings, and how they keep families together and how they do all they do.
Mm. And we've talked about the different types of violence, you know, physical violence, like, you know, domestic violence. People might associate that with you know, hurting someone physically, punching or whatever, and also the emotional manipulation. How common is a sexual element to it, whereby, you know, a woman does not necessarily want to be intimate but is being forced to be intimate? Or, because that's very rarely talked about. And as again, it might just reach a woman who's listening to this or a guy that's listening to this and go, right, that's me.
No, that's very common. And it is something that they will not, I don't know if it's they don't want to talk about it or can't admit it to themselves until maybe you're with them for about months.
Mm.
It's not one of the first things they'll admit. No, because they're trying to get their head around everything else that's going on in their lives. But that is very, very common. A majority of the times it comes into it. Mm. And do you know that it's only in this is the one thing used to amaze me. 1999, up to 99, a man could beat his wife as long as a stick wasn't thicker than his thumb.
Wow.
That was allowed up to 99. Every time I say it, I go, I just can't believe. And when I say this to people, they don't believe it.
You were 5 years in Lifeline and shown, really.
But we were only learning all that. So it was normal. You know, it was allowed, but I suppose it was allowed in schools, but I'm not going into that now. It's, you know, that thing that scared me, that's not long ago.
No.
You know, it really is.
And I don't think it's that long ago whereby someone could be raped, in inverted commas, in a marriage either.
Oh, no, sorry. That's one of the things too, that it wasn't rape if it happened within a marriage.
It wasn't called that.
It wasn't called rape. Mm. You know, that was scary.
Very, very scary.
So it has changed. Yeah. You know, things are changed slowly, but yeah.
And things have changed slowly and then quick and then slowly with from Inishowen Women's Outreach to Lifeline Inishowen. There is a little bit of funding. It's drips and drabs.
Yeah.
And also there's an awful lot of fundraising goes on, and the public, and you always say this, are incredibly generous. But in terms of sort of, you know, facilities, volunteers and stability, what position is Lifeline Inishowen in now?
Well, you know, I've retired now. I'm out. I am taking it easy.
I know you're getting the inside track.
No.
You've left in good state.
Look,
in
yes. And it's been a great, I mean, I've been, what an honour to retire. And for AXA to allow me to donate?
20,000
20,000 to the charity of my choice. I mean, that was great to be able to do that. And it just ensures that the service will continue.
Yeah, and it's a huge lump of cash.
That's so huge.
I mean, how many tea days, coffee mornings would you need for that?
Yeah.
And it was a no-brainer for you.
Sorry?
It was a no-brainer for you, of course.
But I mean, AXA, thank you very, very much. And the people of Inishowen are very grateful.
Did you read the poem at the ceremony of the award?
No, I didn't, because they didn't have enough. I did read it to them first, but they, because of the limited amount of time we had, you know how I can rattle on a bit.
Well, do you know what we have? We have loads of time.
Do we?
So would you read it to us? Would you set it up for us? What? Where did this come from?
This came from a client, must be 20 years ago, but it was somebody who we had supported, right? And I thought it was so relevant to the whole story. She tells a story, and then I'll probably cry in the middle of it, but it's why.
Okay.
Will I read the whole lot, or is that too much?
It's not too much. This is your podcast. Read the whole lot, please.
Right. The love that I have is innocent and true, and I've kept it and saved it specially for you. You have all I am in every way true. Why can't you see that I love you? I don't understand all the fighting and blame. I've done nothing wrong, yet I'm living in shame. Shame of the wrongs that I know I've not done. Please explain to me all the wrong I have done. I'll try even harder to make our love true, for you know I'll do anything just because it's for you. So why can't you see I love only you? Everyone says what a lovely couple we make. Little do they know that we are only a fake. Laughing and smiling and having such fun. Before morning, I'll be on the run. Running from you because of a look, I must say, I don't know I took. I'll teach you to show me in front of my friends. You'll have manners when I take you out again. I don't understand, I've done nothing wrong. I know that I'm stupid and ugly and weak, but I'm trying my best so I don't even speak. And I know that you're right because you told me last week. I'm not worth feeding, never mind keeping. So shut up now, if you're all the time weeping. It must be hard on you having someone like me holding you back for the great man you could be if only you didn't have me. Well, you don't have me now to have and to hold, responsible for the way your life will unfold. I love the way that the grace... And the greatness unfolds, the greatness that has made me young and you old. Not amazing.
Oh, wow.
That tells a lot.
That was a regular person wrote that.
That was a person, yeah.
When I say regular, you know what I mean? So that's their story.
That's their story. And that's every woman. It's every woman's story.
You can change the bits and bobs, but that's the path, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny.
Explain that last couple of lines to me. Read the last couple of lines again there.
Well, you don't have me now to have and to hold. Responsible for the way your life will unfold. I love the way that the greatness unfolds, the greatness that has made me young and you old.
So explain that. What do you think that means?
I think with that, I've gone now and you're not responsible for me anymore. So we'll see how the greatness that you have.
She's almost reborn.
Yes.
He's stuck in there.
Yes, reborn is what, I just thought that was, it's one that always stuck with me. You know, that poem, I just thought that tells a story.
Well, there's someone's life in those words.
It's someone's life. But that's most of the people who've gone through it. And they're told on a daily basis that they are not worth anything. They're useless. Who would look at you? You're a bad mother. Everything that they possibly, you know, anything that hurts them. And they'll threaten that they'll hurt the children. Oh, the other big thing is, you know how not everybody has children. Some people have pets. They have a dog. Mm-hmm. They'll threaten the dog. Mm. And even they'll hit the dog. Right, this is the way it's going to be. You know,
if I can't hurt you,
I'll hurt the dog. Yeah.
If anyone's listening to this who is affected by it, and obviously we'll have some information accompanying the podcast to make it easier for people. Does someone have to be ready to leave, or can it be so desperate and these things escalate that if you're minded that this could be you to get help now? I don't want to give the wrong information, but what if someone's listening to this and they go, that's actually the wake up call. I am living in an abusive relationship. It is progressively getting worse.
Yeah.
Things aren't going to improve, but what will mom and dad think? What about the kids? And we retract back in and there's not one size all fits. What is your advice though?
My advice is please, please just get out. There is support out there. There is help out there. It breaks my heart that we've had people who've been in it for 40, 50 years, right? And sadly, they find it harder because they're supporting their family. They don't want to bring shame on the family. They don't want to. It's all about, please be aware, right? The important people in your life are your family, your friends, and your good friends are the people who support you no matter what you do. So the people who are going to gossip about you, put you down because of, they're not important. What's important is you and your family, and you can make that work. And it's, Please, I would just advise them to get out. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Get the help. There's support out there. There's other places. If you don't want to contact a local service, look up Women's Aid. They have all the numbers for all the different. Please contact someone.
And just to give people the contact details for Lifeline in a show, and they're Monday to Friday now in Carndonagh, 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. 086-065-0353. Or 074-93-732-32, or on Facebook. There are other fantastic groups and organisations who are there to help. No one says it's going to be easy, every journey starts with the first step. And things will, your kids will come back to you, your family, the real people in your life will be there for you.
And look, one thing you have to be very aware of, Greg, it's one of the biggest moves, choices, calls they'll ever make in their life.
Yeah.
And it can be scary. It is scary. But that's what people are trained to do, to be there for you. And it's your journey. It's nobody else's. If you don't feel ready at the time, please keep coming back. Don't just think, you know, the first time there, oh, I'm not ready. Just
know that the service. What I think is really interesting, a lot of the first contact is this abuse.
It is.
You know, so even if it's that call, so you know where you're at and you can start planning.
Yep.
Make that call.
Yeah.
Mary, what do you do now for fun?
What do I do?
I don't think you have much spare time. I've got that feeling, but anyway.
It's amazing how many people have rang me up and said, now that you're retired, Mary, what do you do? But I can tell you, I have had a new grandchild. I have 16 grandchildren now.
Unbelievable.
But I'm afraid to let them know, really, that I'm free.
In other words, you're not a babysitting service.
So I'm I'm very fortunate. I'm very lucky that I have.
What a wonderful family network to have around you.
I have to say, I am really blessed. I think everything I give, I've got back.
Well, you see, you deserve it. And there's not a person listening to this that wouldn't think. I mean, you know, from that initial meeting for three or four people, being knocked back yourself, being told, you know, you're a troublemaker, or to being told by the Northwestern Health Board that there's no need for this, it's already been covered. And that's just two of the hurdles that's overcome. And yet there you are, having dealt with so much and heard so much, and to be such a warm and positive person, and to get the recognition that you deserve as well, even though you don't want it.
No, I
think it's absolutely amazing.
But it's all these people that came in as well. Mm. It isn't just a one-woman show.
I know, but they're not here. This is about you today. And I'm sure on behalf of all of the people, Mary, who've worked with you, volunteered with you, used the service, engaged with you, thank you for everything that you have done, because your legacy is not just what you've done, it's what you've helped put in place for future families, for future women, for future children.
I hope so. Sorry.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Anything else you want to add, or should we leave it there?
No, I think that's just, I keep going back to the amazing woman that I've met while I was there. And please, please do get the help that you need.
Mary Doherty, thank you so much. And thank you for everything that you've done.
What a wonderful lady. Thanks again, Mary, for coming down for a conversation. And that was the Greg Hughes podcast for this week. Don't forget, we release a new episode every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. It's available for you on Highland Radio's website, highlandradio.com, and also on Spotify and on the Apple Podcast platform. Please, if you are on either of the latter two podcast platforms, give us a like, a subscribe, or leave a rating. It really matters and helps spread the podcast far and wide. If you have any feedback, any suggestions, maybe even want to suggest a guest, you can get in contact with the producer of this podcast, Caroline Orr. You can email her, Caroline Orr at highlandradio.com. We'll chat to you again really soon.